This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And today, Adam, we are going to preview the running backs position on the Patriots roster, which is just absolutely loaded, and we could probably do a couple of hours of a show on that position. Just the depth there, some of the top players, obviously, too, is Sony Michel and James White, and adding Damian Harris into the mix. It's a deep and versatile group. We'll get to that in a little bit here. We're going to start with some news, though, and we taped the podcast last week, and I think within 24 hours, the Texans stopped pursuing Nick Caserio and the Patriots dropped their tampering charges. So at least for the time being, Caserio is not going to Houston. And it sounds like the Patriots director of player personnel is staying put at least for the 2019 season.
Yeah, I think that's obviously good news for the Patriots. He's he's a very key member to what they do. And, you know, it just goes to show, you know, other teams notice, obviously. And, you know, I don't think this will be the last time somebody will come after him. He's extremely knowledgeable about really all facets of the team. And, you know, he can really be a GM anywhere if he wanted to be. It's a nice little win for the Patriots to have him stay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty crazy all the different hats that Nick Caserio wears. You know, just kind of looking at it from that perspective, he is basically the head of college and pro scouting for the team, or is one of the head guys along with Monty Eisenford on the college side. He deals with a lot of trades, a lot of salary cap things like contracts, whether it's with their own players or free agents. He scouts teams on their schedule, you know, advanced scouting. He's on the game day coaching staff in the box up top, relaying messages, especially to Josh McDaniels in like situational type things, you know, fourth down, you know, third down and long at your plus 40 or whatever the case may be, you know, just stuff like that. He is, you know, an extremely valuable asset to the Patriots. You know, maybe one of the guys in the league that does more for his position than just about anybody. I mean, I don't know any director of player personnel, and Belichick mentioned this too when he got some questions about Caserio last year, that does more than Nick Caserio does for the Patriots. I mean, he just does a little bit of everything for them. He's a coach on the field at practice. You see him out there all the time. Playing quarterback, playing receiver, you know, getting his hands dirty and really involved. I don't know a whole lot of decision makers or high-level executives that are under center at practice, you know, as much as Caserio is. He's on the road in the scouting rings and for the draft. You know, he's worked out guys privately. He's, you know, very hands-on. So I think this is all great news that he is staying. I do think, you know, not to get too much into the opinions and speculation, I guess is the word, but I do think that there is a very good chance that a year from now, Nick Caserio is shopping his services elsewhere. Now, whether that is to actually leave the Patriots or it's to leverage the Patriots into more money or more power or what have you, I guess we'll find out. But I still think that, you know, I think there's a chance that he could have like a true free agency kind of circuit where he's going to a lot of different teams and he's having kind of a free agency tour like you would see with like a veteran free agent player and maybe even a different sport like in the NBA or something like that more often than you do in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah. When you are like, because if you look at it from the perspective of like, well, you know, what happens when, you know, there's a Patriots assistant coach, you know, that demand for those guys sometimes. And then, you know, even the Patriots front office guys, there's anytime there's a successful, you know, with the Patriots, they're so successful that anytime that there's, somebody on the staff that people just want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So I think that's not, inconsistent at all with Caserio. I think just, people see how much he does and, how valuable he is, and they want to see if it'll work for them. You know, it hasn't necessarily worked that way for other guys, but that's never going to stop teams from trying.
Yeah, really. I'm sure I'm missing some guys off the top of my head, but obviously Scott Pioli, he moved on and he hasn't, he's stuck in some places and certainly had some success in terms of making the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. But I don't believe he has won a Super Bowl outside of New England. Thomas Dimitroff, I think, is probably the closest. But Dimitroff he was a high-level scout for the Patriots. I think he had an official title and everything when he left for Atlanta. But he wasn't as high up as Caserio was. He hadn't reached that level yet. So he probably has the best success story, I would think, as a Patriots exec that left that I can think of. But the Patriots also have Monty Eisenfort, who I mentioned, who is the director of, I believe it's all scouting, but it might just be college scouting. And he's gotten some looks from other teams as well for GM jobs in the past. So they have two guys, I think, that are very, very well thought of and sought after in the league that could be moving, could not be moving, could be staying put. But if Caserio ends up moving in a year when his contract is up and Eisenfort stays, then Eisenfort is a very, very strong candidate to just take over for Caserio in that job. So the Patriots are like you said, they're as much as they are a farm system with their player, with their roster, they're maybe more so of a farm system with their front office.
Yeah.
I mean, it is pretty incredible how many decision makers are around the league and coaches too, that have Patriots roots or Patriots ties. And I think that we think of like a coaching tree for Belichick as like just guys that coached under him. But if you add into the guys that have scouted under him too,
right?
I mean, his reach is just all over the place.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to one other piece of news before we get to the running backs. And that is Josh Gordon, who was seen, throwing with Tom Brady in a practice session that I believe happened on Tuesday of this week, according to Mike Reese. And it was on Brady's Instagram yesterday. Everybody woke up on Wednesday morning and saw, Brady throwing passes to Gordon, which obviously gets you a little bit excited if you're a Patriots fan that maybe Gordon is eyeing a comeback or at least thinking about coming back. Well, that's kind of been the expectation all along, is once he serves whatever suspension is coming his way, that he is going to try to get back out there.
Yeah, and it would be it is sort of a kind of enticing thing for Patriots fans to see Josh Gordon just throwing with Brady. It's funny how like all it takes is just a little bit like of that, for people,
especially
to go
in June,
Yeah. So. The way I look at it, and I think you feel the same way, is, it would be really cool to see him back on the field, and it'd be a really nice bonus, but you can't really depend on it. You can't really expect him to, be with the team for the full season. It's just not something that, it's just not something you can expect. It's something that you can sort of hope for. But just given his history, it's not easy to bank on that. So I feel like, they have a pretty good wide receiver core as it is. Right now you just sort of, you think about that, and then, if Gordon comes back, he comes back, but you can't really put any serious weight into it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, the thing that was so crazy about Gordon is that last year it seemed like everything was just, great. Honestly, yeah. He's played 11 games for the Patriots at that point. And then on a December morning, we all wake up and he's announcing that he's stepping away from football and he's taking the rest of the year off. And then he gets put on the, commissioner's list, the suspended list. And the weird thing about it is that was weird to begin with, because it really came out of nowhere. Like, we had just talked to him like a few days earlier. Now, he didn't talk. I believe it was right after it was the Pittsburgh game. Yeah, it was right after the Pittsburgh game that he announced this, and the league put him on the commissioner's list. And we didn't get to talk to him after the Pittsburgh game, which was a little bit weird because he had talked after every single game up until that point. So when that happened, I think people kind of were like, huh, I mean, what, you know, it's not, he's, you know, allowed to have a day where he doesn't talk to us, but yeah. You know, what's going on with that? And then that this came down. So there was a little bit of foreshadowing, but it certainly wasn't that obvious. And we had just talked to him on Friday before the game and everything seemed normal, you know, just like how he had been the entire time. And I think the other thing that's interesting about it is that the league still hasn't disciplined him at all. You know, yeah. This was months ago and he's still just technically facing this indefinite suspension, but we have no idea. The league is being very quiet about this investigation that they're doing into him and what exactly it is that he violated in his, terms of his reinstatement and all this kind of stuff. So I think it's just weird all around. And then to see him throwing with Brady is obviously exciting. I mean, just from a pure on-field perspective, we know how good Josh Gordon is. I mean, yeah. It's really not a secret. Last year, he put up some I wrote about it today, just some incredible numbers, like, you know, in terms of efficiency. And he was, like, piling up yards faster than just about any receiver in the league in terms of just, like, a yards per catch and yards per attempt basis. I mean, Brady had, like, a 109.9 passer rating throwing to him last year.
Yeah.
They were, like, pretty much automatic on slants and dig routes and stuff over the middle. Once they kind of figured out that the go balls weren't working and they kind of just left those be, they figured out that they could be really, really efficient throwing the ball to Gordon in the intermediate passing game, especially off play action. And they were, like, automatic in on slants and stuff like that over the middle. And Brady was very, very good throwing to him while he was under duress. Also, he was kind of like a under pressure security blanket at times for Brady too. So some of the numbers are staggering. I mean, he put up a better adjusted net yards per attempt than Gronk and Randy Moss in their career with Tom Brady.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, so like, there's a lot of really good efficiency numbers that support Josh Gordon and how much of an impact he made on the team. Now, obviously, they still won the Super Bowl without him, you know, and they put up a ton of points in the AFC playoffs, especially without him. Obviously, the Super Bowl is a kind of a different type of game, but against the Chargers and the Chiefs, they scored at will without him on the field. So it's not like they need him, but it definitely would be nice. And with kind of the pieces that they have around Julian Edelman, with a young receiver like N'Keal Harry and kind of some uncertainty with guys like Demaryius Thomas, for example, just to have a guy that you know can produce in this offense as quickly as he did. I mean, he didn't have training camp. He didn't have any of those things. He just came right in and was putting up 18 yards a catch, you know, off the street, essentially. So it was pretty fun, that's for sure, and pretty great to watch. And as soon as they get those kind of like, I think the back shoulders and the curls and stuff like that were probably the next step for him and Brady. If they get those down, I mean, watch out. Like, this guy's gonna put up over 1,000 yards in this offense if he can stay on the field. So it's I think that that's like really the biggest thing. Sure, it would be nice, but, you know, I don't think that they need him, and I don't think that there's far from any guarantee that he's gonna make it the full season.
Right, exactly. I think it's just, you'd love to see it just because of how good he is and, you know, how obviously how quickly he caught on last year.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, everywhere he's been that's sort of been that, well, he's really good, but, you know, so.
Yeah.
So we'll see, you know.
Yeah. You're pulling for him.
Yeah, exactly. You're pulling for him, and you hope that, you know, this will be the good time that it works out.
Yeah, I saw a stat somewhere. I haven't confirmed it. It's not that hard to confirm, but I think it's that Gordon hasn't finished a season in 5 years. You know, like, yeah, every year it's just there's one year he obviously missed completely, but even the years that he has partial seasons too, where he's not finishing the year because of off, I think it's all because of off field type things with him, with the drug abuse and the depression and all that kind of stuff. So you're pulling for him as a human being more than anything as well.
100%.
All right, let's talk about the running backs. I think that, this might be the best position group on the entire roster. Just top to bottom. I think that cornerbacks obviously has an argument there as well. But I want to start at the top, and I want to start with Sony Michel, because I think that, we liked his rookie year. I think that it was good, but I think that there was a lot of kind of narratives out there that it wasn't exceptional or wasn't great, or a first round picks, type season. But I think that, the expectations for him in year two are pretty high, I would say. And, obviously last year he was on pace, if he had played the full season, to go over 1,000 yards and all that kind of stuff. So what are your expectations for Sony in year two?
Yeah, that's my expectation, eclipse 1,000 yards. Be a good downhill runner, once he gets into space, find an extra gear. That's what I think he is, I like him in the open field. I like it when he, gets to that next level and sort of turns on the gas. So, I think he's, so long as he stays healthy, that's the thing, you never know, with a knee or anything like that, what'll happen. But I feel like he's a good enough back to get to 1,000 yards. I'd like to see them use him more in the passing game. And I think he's, somebody that will, sort of be a dependable option, every game, game in, game out. But, you never know with injuries. With running backs, injuries are always, the thing that comes back to bite him. And he's had some injury history. So, I think he's just your lead back again. And, good down by the goal line, good on short yardage, and, sort of a home run threat too.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing for him is probably, I think that with this running back group in general, they almost accepted the fact that they were going to be predictable with their personnel, which is, I think, interesting, because in today's day and age, with all the analytics and all this kind of stuff that we talk about, the opposite is what you want to be, right? You want to be unpredictable, and you want defenses to not know if you're running or passing on a given play. Now, they were obviously very run heavy with Sony in the game. But that being said, their play action passing game when he was in the backfield was awesome. Like, it was probably one of the most efficient things that they did last year. And mainly the thing that I think that is pretty incredible is that even though they weren't throwing the ball a ton with Sony, when he was on their field, their passing numbers were just off the charts.
Yeah.
Even though they weren't actually throwing him the football because of that play action passing game. So I think that's okay in some respects, that he's not necessarily going to be catching a ton of passes like maybe we thought when they drafted him. But I think that that's obviously him just becoming some sort of a threat. No one's saying that they got to flex him out wide like they do with James White, or have him run like receiver routes and stuff like that. But just as a little bit of a threat in the passing game, I think would be good. But in terms of how he's ran last year, I mean, I don't know how he could get much better than what he did in terms of vision and patience and contact balance. I mean, his ability to run through tackles and just keep going is not like he's like a truck like LeGarrette Blount. It's much more of like a low center of gravity thing and just like having like a lot of power. And that I think is really underrated about him. I posted all of his like explosive runs on Twitter. I think it was last week, and so many of them, he breaks so many tackles. And it's not like he's not Deion Lewis, he's not jump cutting guys and spinning guys and stuff like that. He's just running right through guys. And when you dive at his thighs or at his legs as a tackler, you're not going to bring him down like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that is, stands out to me as a clear strength of his. I think that all of us would like to see him maybe add one more half a gear you know, yeah. like one more little down throttle. Now, obviously, he's like a low, I think he ran like a 4.53 or in that range. So he's not a burner, you know, he's not a Chris Johnson or someone like that that's going to pull away from the defense. But I do think that finishing that some of those explosive runs for touchdowns is like probably the next step for him. Because he came so close on a bunch of them to like breaking those runs for, you know, he'd break it for like 25, 30 yards. And he was like one, you know, half a gear away from being to the house on some of those plays.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that, how much that is of the knee. And I would assume it has a lot to do with it. And I think that both of us kind of thought that he had another gear at Georgia than he did his rookie year.
He did. I agree. Yeah. At Georgia, he was really explosive. I mean,
Yeah, he
seemed like, you know, a home run hitter. And I'd like to sort of see that with the Pats, obviously. But like you said, I think you made a good point about it, his tackle breaking ability. He, you know, you can't really, you know, just sort of half-ass it with this guy when you're trying to bring him down.
No.
He's he's pretty special when he gets the ball in his hands. And you know, like you said, he doesn't need to, you know, necessarily be a James White type receiver, but you know throw him a couple screens, you know,
yeah,
swing passes here and there, keep defenses a little bit more honest when he's in the game for when it comes to that, because I think he'd be really good at it. You know, I think he would you know be very, you know, sort of dangerous in that respect, you know, once he gets his feet wet. But again, that's another aspect of a running back's game that can, you know, take a while at the pro level. It's not something that always comes naturally. So, but, you know, he's on a team, though, where he's not, where he doesn't necessarily need to do that, you know.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot of pressure on him for that. So, they can sort of bring him along as slowly as they want with that.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, Rex Burkhead is a guy that we're going to talk about in a little bit, but also he played a ton, Burkhead did, down the stretch last year in the postseason, partially due to his, he was a little bit more versatile than Sony was, and they could use him in both the run and the pass game. And I feel like Sony's a much better back than Rex Burkhead is. So if you can get some of that passing game versatility out of Sony, now I don't think that he's going to be like Burkhead, who can like line up in the slot and line up out wide and do all that kind of stuff. But even just a little bit of that in his game, I think would go a long way. And honestly, I think that Sony, like kind of scouting Sony, like taught me a lot, honestly, about the running back position, because when I watched Sony at Georgia, I thought that he was a home run hitter. I was like, this guy, you know, this guy's breaking huge, huge runs on a daily, you know, on a weekly basis. And you kind of realize that some of these guys that run in like the 4.5s at the running back position are college football fast and yeah. not like as quite as fast as you maybe you think, you know.
Yeah.
I think the 40 is a little bit overrated for running backs, because I think it's much more about explosiveness and getting into daylight than it is pulling away from people. But right. But like this time around, this, you know, for the 2019 draft, I took a much different look at running backs that were in that range and didn't think of them quite as much of as home run hitters as maybe their college numbers suggested, because Sony kind of taught me, you know, that yeah. maybe it's not quite as fast. Now, a guy that I had wanted to point out that kind of developed his receiving skills later on was Melvin Gordon, who his rookie year obviously was really pretty tough in LA, San Diego, wherever the Chargers were at that point. But year two, he all of a sudden became a much better complete back overall, but he became a much better receiver and right. a guy that was really, really lethal, especially on like screen passes and stuff like that. So it can be, that's definitely a skill, like you said, that can be developed. You know, that's something that that doesn't always come right away for every single player. And in the Patriots offense, there isn't a, you know, James White, it took him a couple of years to even get on the field. And right. now obviously he had Shane Vereen ahead of him at the beginning of his career and stuff like that. But it's certainly a difficult thing to learn, I think, from the Patriots offense perspective. And I think all those guys would attest to that. Let's talk about Damian Harris, who I think is – really interesting because I think that there's a lot. I think there's some high expectations for Damian Harris, to be honest with you. Like, I think that there's a lot of people out there that think that this guy is going to be just as good as Sony was as a rookie. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but I'm wondering where you think that this all kind of fits together, because I think that there is a chance that Damian Harris cuts into some of Sony's touches just because of his, you know, he's a good player too.
Yeah, he's a good player. You know, we talked about him a lot in the lead up to the draft. You know, again, this is, you know, he's not like Sony, because Sony had had that burst in college, yeah. Whereas Damian was more of a between the tackles, you know, downhill guy, can run over you, you know, get that extra 2 or 3 yards after contact. So I think they're different types of backs. I wouldn't expect them to have the same sort of skill set. That said, I think Damian can bring a lot to the table just because he is so effective between the tackles. You know, he's got really good vision with small spaces, kind of like if you don't yeah. have a lot of room to go, he'll find that little slithery, you know, space where he can get that extra 2, 3, 4 yards. You know, and the other thing too is, you know, we were pointing out was, you know, he didn't carry the ball that much at Alabama because there are so many good running backs and they use the rotation. So, you know, he'll come to New England without a lot of carries under his belt, but that's kind of a good thing when you get to the NFL. And, you know, he knows what it's like to be in a running back by committee. And he's played in a, you know, under Nick Saban and stuff like that. So he's about as Patriots ready as you can be for a running back.
Yeah.
You know, so
for sure.
I don't know. Like you know, when I think about this year, I think, you know, Sony's going to be the, like the guy when it comes to running backs. And I feel like, you know, I'd be surprised if he loses a lot of carries to Damian, but I feel like Harris is good enough to, you know, step in when needed. I do want to see what he sort of looks like in the preseason. You know, exactly how well he fares against some of these teams. And I know it's just the preseason, but you know, I want to get a sense for how quickly he's picking things up, but he's a good back. He's different than Sony in terms of, you know, what he brings to the table. But I think he could be effective pretty early on. It's just I'm not sure exactly how much they'd use him.
Yeah, I think that there is some element to this of preserving Sony's knees and preserving mm-hmm. his health overall. So I think that's – if we're going to see, like, a significant amount of Sony's touches go to Damian Harris, I think that that's probably what they have in mind, more so than Damian Harris outplaying him or stealing that job from him or anything like that. I think that there could be games if Damian Harris does, you know, come along nicely in the middle of the season where it's kind of just a Damian Harris game, you know, whether they like the matchup or they feel like they need to give Sony kind of a week off without, you know, sitting him or something like that, where Damian Harris might have 15, you know, 20 carries in a game or something like that. And I don't think that's anything, you know, wrong with that by any means. I really agree with you in terms of his ability to find creases and find open space. I mean, that's another thing that watching a lot of these college guys, you watch these guys that have such great offensive lines and such great teams that you could run like a tractor trailer through some of the holes that some of these guys are running through. I think a great example of that is that Memphis offense with Darrell Henderson that we talked so much about when you're previewing the running backs for the draft. That offense is just wide open. I mean, there's just, you know, there's just holes everywhere. And that's very true with Alabama's offensive line, obviously, too, being one of the better O-lines in the nation because their whole team is stacked. But when you watch Damian Harris's tape, there certainly are examples of him squeaking through little creases and having a great feel of just getting himself free into space. And I think that that's always a good indicator of success in the NFL for running backs, because that's more what they're going to be dealt with. You know, that's more going to be the hand that they're dealt. They're not going to get as many of these huge, even with an offensive line as good as the Patriots, not every carry is going to be, something with a crater sized hole, although they do open up some big ones for some of these backs. But I think that, Harris is, both of the Sony and Harris, even though I think they are a little bit different stylistically, are early down between the tackles running backs in the Patriots system, right? I mean, they're both kind of like first and second down backs. Like that's, I'm sure where they think about using both of them. So I really think it's more of just a preservation and maybe even a little bit more of like Sony Michel insurance. And when they drafted Harris, I think a lot of people are like, why another running back? He just took another one in the first round. And whether it was Ivan Fears or Nick Caserio, a lot of them just said at that point in the draft, he was so far and away the best player that they had on their board that just passing on him just made no sense. They had him, I don't know where exactly they had him graded, but they had him graded much higher than where they ended up getting him. And it was kind of just a no-brainer at that point to take him, even though they didn't. It was kind of like a luxury pick. And you get that, you get to have a luxury pick when you have five picks in the first 100. you can afford a couple of picks in there that aren't at position of need. So I think that that's all, it's gravy at this point for the Patriots at that spot.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about the passing game and James White. I think that the biggest thing that a lot of people are wondering with this running back position too is now with no Gronk in all these running backs. I mean, they obviously were James White, Burkhead, Damien Harris. We haven't even mentioned Brandon Bolden. There's so many of these guys now. Is without Gronk, are we going to see this be like a very heavy featured running backs in the passing game? I think is an interesting question. And certainly James White last year was one of the best players on offense all year long, maybe the most consistent week to week, like maybe even more consistent than Tom Brady. And the question is can there be more James White? Is that possible? And how much do we think that the running backs are really going to be featured in this passing game? Because I think a lot of people are like kind of expecting like there to be formations where the Patriots throw like three or four running backs on the field.
Yeah.
And they like wouldn't, I don't think that that's going to happen, but it's doable. It's certainly doable. And I think plenty of the two running back sets, their pony sets, I think that those are 100% going to be a part of the offense, especially if the receiver position, doesn't come along the way that they want it to.
Yeah. I think, I don't expect a drastic change with the offense, but James White is always going to be such a huge part of the passing game. So, will that role increase? It's hard to say because, he's already such a big part of it, but, as far as schematically what they can do, I mean, McDaniels is always so creative, with what he shows teams formationally and stuff like that and from a personnel perspective. So, maybe he mixes it up even more. But I still kind of feel like right now the passing game is the James White show and, that's how it's going to be. But, who knows? Maybe, Sony sort of rounds out his game a little bit more and stuff like that. But I feel like what we're basically going to see is just more of the same.
Yeah.
But it would be kind of cool to see them, mix it up a little bit more. But, to the point of the tight ends, they are going to have to make up those catches somewhere.
Yeah. And
it's not all going to be the tight ends.
Yeah.
Whether it's the short passing game or, just spreading the ball around more in general, it's going to have to come from somewhere. And, James White is as good a guess as anyone's because, he's just so effective. And he's just so great after the catch. You never you never tackle him with the first guy, you know, like that one-on-one tackle that, you know, after 3 or 4 yards turns into 10 to 12, especially like on third down, and it'll pick it up and teams will go crazy thinking they had them stopped. So yeah, I think, you know, if anything, it's going to fall on James White, but, you know, again, how much more can you give the ball to James White? He's already such a massive part of the offense.
Yeah, so he had 181 touches last year, which is not, you know, it's not anything over the top, right? You know, I mean, I think running backs, some of these bell cow running backs around the league are over like 250. The days of like 300 touches are pretty much over. I think that people, you know, coaches realize that they need to preserve guys a little bit better than that. So we don't see that as much. But I think the biggest thing with James White is that, you know, he had 123 targets and 87 catches last year.
Yeah.
And with around 8.5 yards per catch, you know, I don't know how much more production you can really expect out of him than that. I mean, that's a pretty darn good year. And I think that the biggest thing too, you know, yeah, maybe like if he averaged more yards per catch, like he could get up over like 800 or 900 yards, you know, but these are a lot of short passes. I mean, that's obviously the running back. Like that's what you're going to see. This is a lot of third and threes. This is a lot of, you know, check downs and all that kind of stuff. But he is, I think, probably if not the best pass catching running back in the league, he's certainly in the top 3 or 5 and in the discussion for being the best pass catching back in the league. I mean, he is just incredibly, incredibly good. And he's so gifted, like you said, with the ball in his hands, but he can also just run actual routes. Like you can throw him in the slot or out wide and he's running, you know, he runs a slant and it's like a real slant. Like it's not like a running back running a slant. It's like almost like a receiver or a wide receiver running a slant. So I don't know how much more James White you can possibly see. I think, you know, 123 targets. I don't know if you're going to see very many more than that next year, but I definitely think that at some point in time, I don't know when they might save it. They might do it and then never do it again. I have no idea. But at some point in time, they're going to put multiple running backs on the field for an extended period of time in a game. You know, it's going to be – maybe it's a package. They feel like they have some great matchups against linebackers on the opposing team in the passing game, and they really feel like they can exploit some of those things, and maybe that's where it comes into play or something like that. It's probably going to be more of like a game plan specific thing. I don't think that this is going to be all, you know, the Patriots are going to reinvent the wheel here and have 2 or 3 running backs on the field on every snap. I don't think that we're going to see that or even, you know, every week, every snap would obviously for any personnel grouping would be ridiculous. So I don't think that we're going to see that at all, you know, super consistently, but man, I think that the Patriots have gotten so accustomed to their running backs being such a big part of their passing game. And it's really, it makes them so much better in a lot of situational football instances, like third downs and stuff like that, than they would be without it, because they can on a 3rd and 3, you can rely on those little passes to James White. And like you said, even if he gets, you know, that makes first contact short of the sticks, he's so good at eluding that first contact. And he actually said last year that he expects to win every single one-on-one. Like any time that he has the ball in his hands and he's one-on-one with a defender and he's got to, you know, win that matchup, he said he expects to win every single time. And if he doesn't, he gets disappointed. he gets mad at himself because he knows how good he is, you know, how quick he is and elusive. So so that's where you you know, you see him shine. But another guy that we mentioned him briefly, I want to talk about Rex Burkhead now. And he kind of fits into this whole passing game thing too, certainly. He's definitely James White's on a different level, but Rex Burkhead's a very good pass catching back in his own right too. But I think the interesting thing is that between the three guys that we've already mentioned, and then obviously throwing Brandon Bolden into the mix too, who's obviously more of a special teamer, but he's going to be on the team too. That is 5 running backs. If they carry all of these guys, that's a lot of backs, especially, you know, I've done the 53-man roster projections for what they're worth, but when you try to get to the numbers game of this whole thing and you have to carry all these running backs, it gets kind of difficult, honestly, to make the rest of the roster work. Now, there's obviously some, you know, easy kind of ways to save roster spots, like Ben Watson being suspended and, you know, the tackle position being what it is, and some of the guys that maybe might start the year on PUP or IR, like a Demaryius Thomas. But at the same time, you kind of have to get creative with the roster to fit all these running backs on the 53, and they all deserve to be on the 53, right? I mean, they all have that kind of talent. So I guess the question is Rex Burkhead a roster lock right now as we stand here in June?
Yeah, no, I would say he isn't, you know, just because mostly because of the reasons you stated. And, you know, there's guys in that room who are, you know, good enough to do a lot of the things that he does, and in some cases a lot better. So, I mean, I think the thing that works in Burkhead's favor is his versatility. You know, he can do a little bit of everything. So that helps him. But, you know, does he have a consistent spot on the field now with all these other guys there? You know, I mean, is he – you know, how much would he be used, you know, in an offense that has all these, that has such a crowded room, you know? So I don't know, you know, I think they could, you know, they could obviously trade him away or something like that and see what they could get back for him. But it's just such a deep crowded room that I don't think that there's not necessarily a lock for him on the roster.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you on this one. And I think the biggest thing is, too, is that as much as you love having depth, everybody loves having depth, you really don't want a guy standing on the sideline that never plays.
Right.
Like, it's just – and Burkhead can play in the kicking game a little bit, too, so maybe that's kind of where he carves out in a little bit more of a role. And he's certainly talented enough to be on the 53. Like, if we're just going off of the most talented, the best football players – 53-1 through 53, he's certainly on the list. You know, yeah. I think that's there's no denying that. Now, I think the interesting thing is, and I don't know at this stage of the game with how running backs are being valued across the league, I don't know if there's a ton of trade value for him at this point. But I think it would be interesting if maybe the Patriots can pull off some sort of a player for player trade with Burkhead involved in the deal, where they're not necessarily going to be getting back this a stud. You know, they're not going to trade Rex Burkhead for like some number one receiver, but maybe they end up being able to trade Rex Burkhead to a team that has some injuries at the running back position in training camp and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they might be able to get a player that we might not even have heard of that is a solid kind of role player at a different position. You know, I'm talking about like a fourth tackle or a third tackle, even, or, you know, another interior defensive lineman or something like that. A receiver obviously might be on the list, or a tight end. I think that that's interesting. I think that if they can, if some team has enough interest in Burkhead to do that, then I wouldn't rule it out. I think that it's a lofty expectation to think that he's just going to get outright cut, I think is my point.
Right.
You know, He's too good, I think, for that. So if you can try to get some value out of him, then I could see it happening. Because last year in Miami, I think that Brendan Bolden proved that in a pinch, he can still run the ball. You know, we certainly thought, and, you know, against the Patriots. So I think that if they need it, if they absolutely need him to play running back and not just play special teams, he can certainly do that. So that's your fourth back right there. And if you're, it's tough. It's tough numbers game to get all these guys on the roster. And I don't think any of these other guys that we mentioned already today are tradable assets. Like, I don't think those are guys that they're going to be trading. They're certainly not going to trade James White or Sony or Damian Harris, who they just drafted. So it really comes down to Burkhead. But again, I also think it comes down to, is there enough positional value for another team to value him in a trade?
Right.
But the good news is that a lot of times in training camp, guys get hurt. You know, we know that. Yeah, if a team can get desperate really quick at any position.
Yes.
So if that happens and they have they have depth at a position of need for the Patriots, then all of a sudden there's your trade. So before we go though, I want you to give me your Nick Brissett scouting report. Because I know you're an LSU guy.
Just because he's a running back.
He's a running back. Yeah. He's on my list.
Okay.
Depth chart. Nick Brissett is an undrafted rookie.
Yeah, I'll give you my Nick Brissett.
Let's do it.
All right. So he's probably the least talented in terms of raw talent back they've had in a while because he was behind Fournette, he was behind Geis, and that was not like controversial at all. Like he had a couple fumbling problems earlier in his career, but he was somebody that was like never complained about it. He was always pretty good on special teams, and like very very good on special teams. He was a real special teams like asset. And he's sort of just a straight runner. Kind of, he's not somebody who's going to juke you out of your shoes, and he's also not like somebody who's exceptionally fast either. So there's no sizzle to that steak, man. He's just basically like a good solid running back. Like, and some of the long runs he had last year were just, you know, where there was a gaping hole and nobody there. And he's a nice solid player, but like he was definitely like a major downgrade from Geis, right, who's just like a spectacular player. And I think everybody will see that more this year. He's a solid player. He's a good locker room guy. He's smart and he's really willing to play special teams. So if he, you know, makes any team, it'll be because of his special teams. I don't think he's like anywhere near a number one running back in the NFL.
I think you just described Brandon Bolden.
Yeah, exactly. They're both from Baton Rouge.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both from Baton Rouge.
Just, you know, like all the things you said, special teams, not like extremely explosive. I know you ran in the low 4.7s, which is not very good, obviously. But he comes that program – obviously, I think it was Kevin Falk, right, who is kind of the LSU banner man for the Patriots. And he certainly came very highly regarded out of LSU in terms of what he was as a teammate and his, you know, effort level. And I think Falk was a guy that really vouched for him with the Patriots, and that's how he landed here. But I think that was a good scouting report. I think you definitely just described Brandon Bolden.
Very similar players.
Like one cut runner doesn't
totally downhill.
Downhill, you know. Plays special teams, great teammate.
Yeah,
that's. I know that Patriots fans, some Patriots fans out there, don't see the value in holding a guy like Brandon Bolden on the roster, but it's valuable. I'm telling you, a lot of those running backs last year, you know, obviously there's a lot of new faces, but James White in particular mentioned that he still talked to Brandon Bolden in Miami when Bolden was in Miami. They texted almost every day, James White said, you know, just as like a mentor. And there's a boombox actually that Brandon Bolden brought into the Patriots locker room to play music when he got there. And the boombox is still there. And Brandon Bolden's locker last year was empty the entire year.
Wow.
Like they left the boombox on a chair in front of Brandon Bolden's empty locker like it was Brandon Bolden.
That's
for the
crazy
entire season. And then he came back and everybody is just like so happy to have him back.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said for those kinds of guys. Like those are glue guys. Those are guys that just keep the locker room together, keep the mood light. And when you're playing in such big games with high pressure stakes, like the Patriots do, having those types of guys that can really just keep the mood, what it needs to be in any given time is just, it's valuable. It's obviously not as valuable as having like, you know, a Tom Brady, but it's certainly valuable nonetheless in its own right.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything you want to tease or talk about that we didn't hit there?
No, I mean, there's a bunch of 7-on-7 tournaments coming up for Mass Varsity and that we'll be checking out. And there's also a lot of transfers right now. A lot of player movement, way more than, you know, when I first started covering high school football around here. And we've covered a lot of that before, but it seems like, you know, right now there's just so many kids, you know, going from one school to the next, you know, going to schools and reclassifying and repeating years and stuff like that. So in some cases it doesn't make a big difference, but in others, if it's a kid who's from a very small program, you're losing a two-way starter, a special teams player, and you're a lot of times losing your best player, and it's very sort of destabilizing for that program. So it's sort of an issue that a lot of coaches, you know, are struggling with, because, you know, every other year they're losing. And there's one program in particular that has lost three players in the last year and over the last year to the same school. And, you know, a couple of those players are scholarship players. So it's tough. So it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of coaches are talking about it. It's a big issue. And so, you know, we'll continue to sort of, you know, monitor that as it goes on.
Yeah, in the high school game especially, you lose like one of your better players, you could, that guy could have played four or five positions for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we had a kid in high school that played, was our best playmaker on offense. He was, you know, like a wide receiver, running back, kind of hybrid playmaker athlete, so to speak, if you will. He was our starting strong safety. He was our starting kick and punt returner, and he was the kicker. He played five positions and he played them all extremely well.
Yeah.
And when he left, it was like, okay, well, now we need a new number one option on offense.
Yeah.
A new like playmaker, like, you know, our version of like a Derwin James on defense.
Yeah.
We need a new Cordero Patterson and we need a new Julian Edelman on punt. Yeah. Lost like 90% of our production.
It happens a lot. So yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. And I obviously was, you know, nowhere near that good. So I'm like just sitting on the bench and I'm just like, how is he this good at all of these things?
It's funny.
He wasn't even like that. You know, he didn't go on to play in college or anything like that. It wasn't like he was, you know, in the grand scheme of things, all that good. This is, you know, Needham High football has had some good players, but obviously we're not really one of those top programs. So we don't have like these D1 athletes coming every year. But on clnsmedia.com, I wrote about Josh Gordon. Go check that out. Things that, he just did well last year and kind of what we talked about at the beginning of today's show, just how nice it would be to have him if they could get him back. I also wrote about simulated pressures, which is kind of like a new hot vocabulary word around the NFL. It's like it's really, you know, it's a fancy way of saying blitz. It really is, but it's a cool thing. You know, essentially in a nutshell, these are pressures that I think a lot of people would remember from last year, like the playground defense, where a lot of guys are around the line of scrimmage and you don't know who's coming. And then they end up actually only sending four guys, but they're guys that you're not expecting to come from, you know, they're coming from weird angles. Like you end up sending the slot corner on a blitz, or the guy from a first level defender on the line of scrimmage drops in coverage and the linebacker from the second level is actually the guy that's rushing the passer. Stuff like that really confuses teams, but still allows defenses to drop seven into coverage. And it's kind of been an answer for a lot of defensive coordinators to all these high powered spread offenses that just have receivers open all over the field. You can't really commit an extra guy into the pass rush too often because you're just losing too much on the back end in coverage. So this allows them to, it's more of a head game than like a traditional blitz. Old school blitzes are like, five or six man pressures where you're just trying to send more guys than they have blockers, right? You're just trying to overload a side or, you know, stress a protection scheme. This is more like a mind game. Mm-hmm. And obviously that fits very well in with Bill Belichick and what he's been doing. The guy that started it, I think, is an LSU coach, Arianda.
Is that? Oh, Aranda, Dave Aranda. Dave Aranda. There's actually a really cool YouTube video. It was on the Big Ten Network when he was still at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And it's very short, but it talks about where he brings pressure from and how he uses matchups of sort of blocking matchups where he can sort of find the best the best way to attack an offense like that. It's really cool because he goes into, you know, well, this guard is going to, if we align this way, this guard is going to try to block this guy and we like our matchup on their running back. And it's only like a couple minutes long, but it's pretty interesting. Aranda is somebody who I've always thought will end up in the NFL.
Yeah,
Because
one of the hottest coaching names out there right now.
Yeah, he's just really, really smart. He operates out of a 3-4 base, but he's pretty multiple, and his blitz packages are crazy because there's always, not always, but there's a lot of times there's somebody just a free runner.
Yes,
you know, coming in at the quarterback, and wonder how it comes out.
Yeah, that's exactly what these are. I'm sure that if I'm actually wanting to ask Bill Belichick, like when he remembers kind of these simulated pressures starting, but Aranda has sort of given the credit as kind of being the guy that brought it to a big time program. And then, you know, the NFL kind of took notice from there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it all stems from. And it's very, very cool. It's such a great answer to having so many of these spread and high-powered offenses, not even just spreads, but stuff like what Sean McVay is running, for example, which is more like a condensed formations and all that kind of stuff. It's so difficult to stop these offenses today because of just how innovative the schemes all are, you know, and the route combinations and stuff. And this is a way that you can rush four and, like you said, still get some of those free runners at the quarterback, even though you're not overloading a blitz or sending the house or, you know, sending six rushers or whatever the case may be. So check that out as well. It's probably useful, not that we have very many people listening in Detroit or Miami, but if you're a Lions fan or a Dolphins fan, give that a read too, because I'm sure Matt Patricia and Brian Flores are taking those things with them as well. And we'll be back next week. We're going to break down, let's stick on offense, and we can break down the wide receivers. And that's another position that's going to take a while.
Yeah, so, another pretty loaded group there.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchner, I'm Evan Lazar, and thanks for listening.